All right. Well, welcome back. I'm full. I don't know if you're full.
I am re-energized and ready to go.
And I don't know if you're full, but in any event, welcome back. This is still Introduction to Programming using Python. Susan and I are back, of course, over there. I'm merely Christopher Harrison. And, you know, we left off taking a look at how to write files. What do you think we might talk about next, Susan?
Seems to me there is a rather logical segue from that, which might be to talk about once you've written to a file, at some point you might want to be able to read it back again.
Well?
So, shall we jump in?
Let's do it.
Let's start talking about how to read from files. You know, one of the things about working with files or, you know, again, coming back to our issue of problem solving, writing things down is all well and good, but it doesn't help you if you can't read it again later. It's as simple as that. You know, making
Sometimes with my handwriting, I can't read it later.
Well, like, that's also important. Yeah. You know, actually, and strangely enough, it actually has its own parallels to programming. It's nothing like you write it in XML and somebody's expecting it as a CSV.
Yeah, so, exactly. Or, you know, UTF-8 encoding.
Right. Yeah. So there are equivalents to I can't read your handwriting in the programming world. As well. So absolutely, it's essential that we have not only that we can write to a file, but we can read it back again when we need it. If you think about it, right, when you create a shopping list, you need to be able to read that shopping list later so you know what to buy. It's as simple as that. Making the shopping list doesn't help if you don't have it with you at the grocery store and you can't read it when
yep.
you get there. Checking the number of guests you have on the guest list so you can see if you've got enough food. Looking up a phone number so you can call somebody. I mean, really, what is...
Yeah.
Okay, there was this device we used to use years ago. It was this thing. It was a big book full of names and numbers. It was called a phone book.
I'm sorry. You totally lost me
I
there.
Know.
A what?
Phone book, yeah. Not so common anymore. But, you know, so what is a phone book, really? It's just a list of names and phone numbers. So, but it's one thing if they write it down, but if you can't, don't have it to look up again... You know, how do all those websites that look up phone numbers for you work? Guess what? They're probably reading that information from a database or
yep.
from a file. The same one that was used to print the phone book in
yep.
Beforehand. So in programs, we're often writing code that will read information that's saved inside a file. If you think about an e-reader, you know, if you like to read books on your tablet, you know, you could, nice little apps you can install on your Surface and so on. When you start up an ebook, you don't have to start over from the beginning of the book every time you go back to read your book. It'll remember what chapter you were on, what page you were on. So that when you go back to start your book again, it just picks up where you left off. How do you think your program remembers that? What it does is it's probably creating a little file on your tablet that says, hey, by the way, in this book, they were on this page. So when they start up again, the program will actually say, quick, go check the file that says what book they were reading and what page they were on. And that way, we'll know where to bring them back to in the code.
Yep.
When you play a video game, I really find it very annoying when video games don't remember where I finished. It's really annoying when you play a video game and you have to keep restarting from level one every single time, especially these video games that are more story mode and things like that. You know, you're playing Halo or something like that. It's really nice when it remembers, oh, I had passed this level and I'd achieved the following and I'd earned these weapons and so on. So that way, when I start up the game again, there's probably a little file that was created. So my mm-hmm. program has to be able to read that file and remember what level was I on, what weapons did I collected, you know, how many hit points do I have and all that kind of good stuff. Yes, I am.
What your charisma roll was.
Oh, wow. All right.
Sorry.
There we go. Yep. And that's gotten way more complicated now. There's all these new modifiers.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's changed. My kids got into that and everything's changed. I can't even
when
figure
I
out
was
anymore.
Your age.
Yeah. But I'm only 29.
You're only 29.
Yeah.
I think I said I was 32.
Version 1.0, I think I was playing.
Yeah.
Luckily,
yeah.
the dice are still the same.
Bed book.
So my kids can at least use the same dice I used when I was
there. There you go. Yeah. Family heirlooms. You pass your dice down from one generation to the next. All
absolutely.
Right. Anyway.
Anyway, but back to the code. The other thing that's really cool, even if you're not creating a file, the other thing that's really interesting and has become a very popular trend in the last about 5 to 6 years has been the concept of open data. And open data is really quite cool because with open data, basically what's happened is with the advent of smartphones and tablets and so on, a lot of people have started creating their own apps. And
right.
you see this happening more and more these days. And you may have noticed apps that you get that tell you when the bus is coming or that tell you where all the road closures are. Or maybe it's just, I said, it's amazing the number of apps. Or you can get apps that'll tell you what happened on the last health inspection at the restaurant you just went to. I know New York City, there you can actually get a data file that will tell you the results of all the health inspections. It's a matter of public record. So what a lot of governments will do is they will make the files where they stored the results available to the public. And for programmers, this is gold. You can do such cool stuff with open data, because basically what they're saying is, here's a file, funk, read it, do stuff with it.
Yep.
So you could get the file from the New York City, from New York City, that says, here's the health inspections of all the restaurants. And then you, once you're done this module, would be able to read that file.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how to search values in a list. So you could take those values, put them in a list, and do a search for somebody. Go and say, oh, wait, you wanted this restaurant? Let me look for that restaurant name and come back and tell the person what was the results of their health inspection. You could actually do that with Python based on what you've learned in these 2 days, which is pretty cool. So I do, I'm just going to pop over to Internet Explorer here. And I want to show you when I find the right one. Here we go. Get out of a chat window. And I want to show you how we can actually go search for open data. So if you're looking for interesting data you could potentially use in your code, if you actually just type open data, you will find all kinds of different websites from all over the world. I live in Ottawa, so if I search for open data Ottawa, and I search, I'll actually see that the city of Ottawa, where I live, has a special open data website. And if I click on that, it says, oh, well, here's our open data portal, which is all kinds of data that you're welcome to access. And I go, well, that's interesting. What happens if I say, let's get some data? And it says, well, here's all types of different data that I can collect. And they're in different file formats. You can see some of these are XLSX, so this one's an Excel spreadsheet. You may look at this one is CSV. We looked at CSV files yesterday, or not even yesterday, just before the meal, so just a little while ago. So you can get a CSV file that contains all the vehicular access ways, apparently. But water...
access ways.
Absolutely. Never know when I need those. But planning information, water information, federal governments, provincial governments, it's amazing how much information is out there for open data. One of my personal favorites that I came across recently, Australia has a remarkable collection of open data. And one I found in particular, you can see right here, this tells you about all the animals they have in the Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery.
Well,
just in case you needed to know more about the Tasmanian tiger and Tasmanian emu, all the information you need to know about the exhibits at the Tasmanian Museum is right there in open data.
And yeah, I got to tell you, I was up late last night. Yeah.
Worrying about Tasmanian emus.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I'm sure you were.
Yep.
But it's really, but just to show you the incredible breadth of information that's out there in open data. And this is information that is free to use. You just go, you can download that file, read that file into your program, and do what you will with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is often used in apps on tablets or even on websites. Python can be used to build a back-end code for websites.
Yep.
So you can build a web page, and your web page could say, take the animal name they typed in, go call a program written in Python that will search the list of fauna at the Tasmanian Museum and come back and tell me, yes, we do have that at the Tasmanian Museum. So you'd write a little web page, somebody would type in the animal name, and then you would call a Python program behind the scenes that reads this information from the open data and gives back a result. I'm using Tasmanian Museum, but insert whatever data you found from open data here for your city, your state, your country, your province. And I said, it's a real wonderful trend, and this is a powerful, powerful thing.
Yep.
They will be in different file formats. Some of them have CSVs, some of them be Excel files. So that can cause some fun along the way, because you try and just open up an Excel file and read it. In Python, it's going to have a lot of weird extra characters, so you might want to open it in Excel, save it as a CSV file, and then read it into Python. So we'll talk a little bit about file formatting, but you can do it.
Yep.
It's really quite cool. All right. So on that note, let's take a look at how we can actually read a text file. So let's keep it simple to start.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good news is you already know the function you need to use to open a file. It hopefully should look familiar if you were with us when Christopher was helping us in that last module. We use the open function to open up a file, and we specify the name of the file we want to open, and we specify the access mode.
So it's the exact same as we did with write, because we're just opening the file back up, but something tells me you're going to use a different access mode.
Exactly, right, because it's the access mode that determines what the program expects us to do once we have opened the file. So if we specify an access mode of read, then it expects us to be reading the files write.
Yep.
If we are writing to the files. And then there is, this came up in the chat window earlier, there's an R plus, which means read and write, or you can also say W plus to say read and write as well. So how does my program know if I'm reading or writing to a file? The access mode. So R for reading a file, W to write to a file, A if I want to append to the existing file content, and B is for binary files. There was a question in the chat window about binary files. Binary data is things like images, audio files, video files, those are stored as binary. It's unusual in Python, at the level we're working with here, that you would be reading and writing for binary files, but I just wanted to mention it because if you ever do need to like read the contents of an image file, you'd have to use the binary file access mode because they're read quite differently than they are from text files. And as I mentioned, our plus sign or W plus sign will open up with as a read or write, so you can do both.
Yep.
All right, so once I've opened the file, how do I actually read the contents? Kind of important.
You know?
Now, here
details,
we go.
Details.
Here's one of those wonderful ones. Okay, anybody out in the Q&A, any of our audience want to guess the name of the method we use to read read the file contents?
I think you're trying to give people a hint. By the way, I just want to say that a couple of people love the Tasmanian emus, and somebody from Vancouver says hello.
Oh, hi, Vancouver.
And nobody in the chat window yet.
Yeah, we're just going to wave a little bit of a delay.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait a
there
couple
we
seconds.
Go. Okay, so I see
what
the R.
Would be the
that's the access
for
mode.
A read.
Yep. So the method would be, there we go. Yeah, now we're getting all sorts of reads coming
guessing
through.
Guessing, yes. Why? What a shocker. Yep. Yes, and I do, you know, I joke about this, but I really do appreciate it when the people who are developing a programming language make the function names really intuitive.
Yeah.
So you think, well, maybe there's a method called read. Well, guess what? There's a method called read.
Yep.
So you specify your file and you do a read. What this will actually do is this is actually going to return the entire file contents into one great big string.
Yep.
So when I call the read method, it returns the entire content of the file, every single line you've got in there.
Everything inside
that
file.
And puts everything, dumps it all into one big string.
Okay.
So file content is going to contain all of the file.
Somebody said read toasters.
Read toasters. Nice. Somebody was with us yesterday, I can tell. All right, so it returns the entire content of the file. Now, of course, there are definitely times when that's a bit clunky.
Yep.
You know, we were looking at CSV files in the last module, and in that one, you probably want to read it row by row. Give me the first row, give me the second row, and so on. So you can also, if you prefer, use readline. So that's sometimes useful. In particular, where I really love using readline is situations where maybe I have a CSV file and the first row is titles.
Yes.
You'll see that, you know, in Excel spreadsheets, you know, the first row of the spreadsheet is telling you what's in each of the columns. We do the same thing sometimes in CSV files. So when someone opens up our comma separated variable file, the first row is actually the column headers. And then we have the data. So by doing a read line, I can distinguish between, okay, my first row here is the column headers, and the following rows, as I go through them, I will know are the actual data. So I can distinguish between the two a little more cleanly. So readline, as you might guess, since it's readline, returns one line. So let's do it, because really, you've got to start playing. That's the only way to do this. Practice, practice, practice. And this time I'll remember to maximize my window right away. All right. Okay, so I'm going to just create a file, because I need a file to read. So I'm going to do the open containing folder there, and I'm just going to go here and create a new file. Let's just create a new text document, that'll work fine, called Tasmania.txt, perhaps. Yes, I'm going to learn all about my Tasmanian emu now.
Come to Tasmania.
All right. And then I'm just going to open that file up in Notepad. And in Notepad, I'm going to list that there is the Tasmanian devil endangered, which is an endangered species. And then we have the Tasmanian emu, which is, in fact, extinct. And we have the Tasmanian tiger, which sadly is also extinct. And then you have the possum, which I promise you, certainly true in Australia, I'm guessing true in Tasmania as well, is common. That's kind of like squirrels, raccoons, there's possums everywhere off that way. And I'm assuming it's true in Tasmania. Might not be, it's an island, but gives me something to start with.
We'll go with it.
All right, so I have some data in a file, and now I want to write a program that's going to read that content.
Okay.
All right, so I'll leave that file over here so we can kind of remember what it was doing. So what I need to do first is I'm going to basically open the file first. So I'm just trying to think of a good name for my variable. I'm just going to call it my file. I'm sorry, I'm not feeling particularly original. That's terrible, isn't it? All right, it's bugging you.
Just All right. call a file.
Animal file. All right, animal file equals...
lowercase a.
Thank you. Doesn't have to be. It won't give you an error.
Yeah, but you know,
we were trying to be consistent yep. in the way we're doing our casing, camel yep. casing versus Pascal casing. We talked about that yesterday when we did variables. And that is equal to open, and we have to specify the file name. And I'm just going to be different from what we did last module. I'm going to hard code the file name this time.
Sure. Yep.
And I called it, what did I call it? Tasmania.txt. Tasmania.txt. And then I have to specify my access mode, and I am going to be reading this file. So I'm going to specify mm-hmm. the R. So first of all, I'm going to open my file. And then I'm going, let's try first of all, just say all file contents equals animal file dot read.
Okay.
And then if I simply print all file content, and I've done it again, I've gone and made that uppercase, try to be consistent. And if I print all file contents to the screen, we should see the list of all the different animals that were in that file displayed up on the screen.
Let's see it.
So we run, and, oh, it can't find my file, tasmania.txt. I wonder if...
might have saved it to the wrong
that's,
spot.
Or
yeah.
it might be .txt.txt. You know how it does that on you once in a blue moon? Let me go to my open containing folder here, double check the file name. Open the containing folder. It is there.
Yeah, no, it is. It's got exactly
But I
exactly,
that, yes. I'm going to say, what I want to show you what happened to me here is view the file name extensions. And because of the way I created it, and when I, Notepad automatically puts on a .txt extension. So when I typed in a file name of tasmania.txt, it made it .txt.txt. Luckily, I've hit that error before. As you can tell, I told you, the more mistakes you make, the better you get at finding them. So that's probably why it failed.
Yep.
All right, so the file name was off.
Take two.
And there we go.
Perfect.
There is my output window displaying all the contents of files. So boom, already mm-hmm. I have the ability to just get all the contents of my file read in.
Yep.
Boom. Now let's try reading a single line at a time. So we're just going to modify this. So this is going to be read all file contents. So that would be one option. And I'm going to comment that code out using my Control K, Control C. And this time, I'm going to do a animal, first animal equals animal file dot read line. So this time, I'm just reading the first line. And then I'm just going to print that value, first animal, on the screen. And then what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read the first two rows. I think some of you can guess on, if I wanted to read all the rows, I might need a loop. So we will get to that, but just to start, keep it simple to start.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now I read the first line, put that into a variable called first animal, and the second line, put that into a variable called second animal. I run, and sure enough, I see the first two rows from the file printed out on the screen. Success, already making some good progress.
All right, I like it.
Okay, let's go back and learn something else. Let's play some more. One of the most common file formats you do end up reading are CSV files.
Absolutely.
So one of the things we have
like
actually...
the file you just created.
Yeah, the file I created was actually a CSV mm-hmm. file. I wasn't even thinking about it. It's just so intuitive and so common. A lot of the open data files you find, you will often find CSV files or Excel files, which you could save as CSV files. One of the great things is... you aren't going to be the first person to try and read a CSV file. And so many other people have to read CSV files as well. So one of the great things is there's a library to help you read CSV files specifically.
We're not launching rockets here. Whatever it is you're trying to do, somebody else has already done it. Quite frequently, they've already created a library for you to use. Use it. Remember, got a couple of lazy programmers here, you know? Be lazy. Take advantage of what's already there. Best code in the world is the code that's already written.
Absolutely. Because I could write code that take that read line output and go through, find the comma, and say, get the string starting from the beginning to the first comma, and that's the animal name. And I could do all that. It's quite possible. It's called parsing.
Yeah.
And it's been done by many a programmer. But you know what? There's a module that will help you read CSS files.
Yep.
Let's use it.
Exactly. And I'd even go one step further, that one of the most common mistakes that I see developers make is they look at something and they go, well, I could create code to solve that problem. You know what? You're absolutely right. You could. And you might even be thinking, and I might be able to do it a little bit better than they could. And again, maybe you could, maybe you couldn't, maybe you could. But in the long run, you've got a solution. It's ready, it's all set, ready to go, you could use it. Just go ahead and use it. It's there, and that allows you to then focus on what the real task or the real problem is at hand, rather than having to worry about the nitty-gritty of going in and doing all of this.
Yeah, like, so you know, because you're not writing this program, you probably, even though your program has to read a file, the problem you're probably trying to solve just happens to require that data.
Yep.
So let's not spend more time than we have to just getting the data. Then
exactly.
We can focus more on looking at the data that we've got.
Could we go back in and write a bubble sort? Sure. I've got better things to do with my time. I'm just going to use sort and move on.
Exactly. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So there is a library. If you import CSV, you will have a library you can use in your code to help you read CSV files. And I want to show you a couple of the functions you might want to use when reading CSV files from this module. So if we go to the slide, you can see you do have to import the module because this functionality is not included in your Python by default. You have to say, I want to use the functions inside this module. And once you've done that, there is a reader function. And what the reader function will do is it'll actually return all the rows that were inside the file, but it will return them instead of one just big giant string, it actually returns them as a list. And we just learned a little earlier how we can process and work through lists. So once you've got the values in a list, it does assume by default that you're using a comma to separate the different values in your file. But it is possible. Sometimes the data in our file might contain something like an address. And the address has a comma inside it. So sometimes a comma is not the best separator to use in a CSV file because there might be commas within the data. So sometimes people might use a slash or they might use a semicolon, it's fairly common. But the idea is you can't be sure that every single CSV file actually uses a comma to separate between different values.
Yep.
So if you look at the syntax on the slide, you'll see that the reader function, you can call it a couple of ways. You can either call it by passing in the name, just the name of the file. Mm-hmm. That will assume you're using a comma to distinguish between the different values in a row. Or you can specify, by the way, the delimiter I'm using in this file is, and in this case, I'm specifying a comma, but it could be a semicolon, a colon, a slash.
The number of times that I open up a file and it's got a CSV extension and it's using semicolons.
Yes. And you read the data and you're going, why is it all messed up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that unusual. A lot of times it's because of address information. A lot of times addresses contain commas.
Yep.
Yeah, so it comes up fairly often. So now what we can do is, so we specify our file name, we specify our access mode, we open the file name with the access mode. That's nothing new there, right? I could talk about the new code in a second. But so we specify our file name, our access mode, we say open our file with the access mode read, and then we're using the CSV function reader to read that file. And take the contents, and that's going to return a list, which is going to end up in a list variable called data from file. Now, I have kind of cheated a little bit here and snuck in some new syntax that you guys haven't seen before. And that is right here, this word with, and the with as my CSV file. We haven't seen this syntax before. Suddenly this is, like, I'm not actually executing a loop here. But
no.
it looks a little bit like a loop.
It does. And again, I noticed the colon and the tab.
Yeah, and it's indented here as well.
Yep.
What this is doing is, last module, Christopher, you were talking about how sometimes you can get an error when you try to open a file and it's already in use.
Yep.
So we were talking about sometimes it was important to close your file because otherwise, much like, you know, if you open up a Word file and someone else tries to open the same Word file at the same time, it'll go, you can't open it, it's already in use.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we're writing code, we write code that opens a file and then an error occurs so it doesn't get closed. So then the next time you try and run the program, it gets confused when it tries to open the file, you get an error message because it's saying, no, it's still open from last time. I can't open it again. And as a programmer, you get really frustrated trying to figure out, like, how do I release that lock and get it to work again?
Right.
When you use this method, when you use this syntax, I should say, to open a file, what this does is it's basically designed to help protect you. When you say with open file as and give your file a name this way, instead of saying my CSV file equals open file name access mode, instead I'm saying with open file as, so this is the file name here, my CSV file, you can call it anything you like. When you do it this way, this syntax ensures if there is an error during the processing, the file will always be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So if an error happens during the open or somewhere in your processing, if an error happens anywhere in the indented code as you're processing through the data, the file will always be closed.
And even if there wasn't an error, it would still close it for you.
Yes, it does the close for you. So this way, I don't have to remember to close the file. I don't have to add the error handling, say, if there's an error on open, please make sure the file still got closed. Comes back to, I get to be a lazy programmer by adding the words with and as.
Yep.
I save myself having to worry about file close.
Yep.
It's efficient. It's also protecting yourself.
Absolutely. And actually, I would even go just kind of one slight step sideways. But just to mention, because I know we have a lot of developers who do other languages, that for those of you who've done .NET, this is analogous to that using statement where it will automatically clean up whatever the variable was, so like files and database connections. So that's exactly what with as is doing for us.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a useful syntax. It's one I would recommend. It's a little more confusing. That's why we didn't want to introduce in the very first module on files.
Yep.
But I would actually recommend you get used to using the with open as file name instead of file name equals open, because you're less likely to have problems executing your code. So that's just the syntax there.
So I'm just laughing because, again, we've got that little bit of a delay. So I just said about the with
just
and as.
Just like using?
And sure enough, there in the QA is, whether or not the with is just like using.
Bingo. All right. So well yep. spotted by someone out there in the audience.
Exactly.
All right, so we were just talking about the with and the and. Okay, now once we have all the rows from a CSV file return, remember I said when we use the reader function inside the CSV method, so we're calling reader, we give it the name of the file, and it returns a list that contains all the rows, so it'll be a list of all the rows into this variable data from file, so that's going to be a list.
And, you know, what's nice about that is anybody who's tried to parse through a file line by line by line manually,
it's nasty.
It knows, how much of a problem that can wind up being. Now, granted, yes, loading everything up into a list isn't necessarily the best use of memory, so, be careful about doing something like that. I'm not going to, try to grab a 30 meg file and just load that into memory, but if I know that the file is maybe only about 20 lines, 30 lines long.
Even 100 lines. Lines or 1,000 lines.
Yeah,
you can handle 1,000 lines.
Throw it into a list, be done with it, because it will make your life that much easier when you're trying to program it. So, unless you're working with megs and megs and megs of data, don't worry about loading up some data into a list and reading that all from a file. Don't worry about it at all.
Because we saw an entire module of all the cool features and functions we can do when we work with a list.
You could do a for,
We had that cool for loop for looping through a list. We had that index function that would allow us to search a list. So effectively, that suddenly means I can search a file.
Exactly.
Load the file into a list, search the list. Boom, you just search the file to see if a value's in there. We had the ability to update the list, add to the list, delete from the list. So suddenly you're getting all of these capabilities and all this functionality really easily to do all of that information or all those functions on the data from a file.
So exactly. Yep.
At least they're so nice to work with. That's a great way to go. Now, if you do have all the values into a list and you want to see all the values, well, what did we see as a way of looking at all the values in a list? We saw you can use a for loop. And we do that. Remember, each value in the list is going to be one row.
Okay.
I do want to be specific about that. So if we actually take a look at the file we had here, the list will actually have a value of Tasmanian devil, comma, endangered.
Mm-hmm.
The second value in the list will be Tasmanian emu extinct. The third value in the list will be Tasmanian tiger extinct.
Okay.
The fourth value in the list will be possum common. It is not going to be the individual values. So each row will be one list item. So I'll print that out so you can kind of see how that works. All right, so let's do that as an example because I think we need to see that in action. And this was read file line by line. I'll just take that code and we'll comment that out with my control Casey. And then this time, instead of doing, I'm going to add change my to a with open Tasmania text as animal file colon. So now I'm using my with as syntax to open the file, just a slight change there in syntax. And then I specify that I, and let me remind myself of the syntax because every now and then I draw a blank on these things. That's right, csv.reader, thank you. Then I need a, let's call it all rows. I'm going to call it all rows. I'm trying to think meaningful names. All rows list. So a list of a list that contains all the rows from the file, and that is going to be equal to csv dot. Oh, no IntelliSense. I forgot to import the CSV module, so that I have access to those awesome functions. Now, when I do csv dot, I can actually see the reader function in my IntelliSense. And I specify that I want to read the animal file that I just opened into that list.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, what I want to do is now I want to say for current row in all rows list, print current row. So let's print each of the rows right up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
If we run, hopefully we should see a nice printout. Oh, I was going to say something's going to be wrong. Current row is not defined. That's because I have three R's in current row instead of current row. Talk like a pirate day was on the 17th. It's not today. So let's try that again. And boom, there's all my rows printed on the screen.
Yep.
I'm just going to run through this quickly with the debugger because sometimes just seeing it all spewed out doesn't make it clear that it really is one row is one value. And that's so essential to understand because that's going to really affect how you process the data. So if I put a breakpoint here on the for loop, actually, let's even do it right here when we populate the list. So now when I run, I can hold my cursor over the all rows list. And right now that doesn't have a value because the yellow arrow means that's the next line of code that will be executed. So when I hit the step into button or hit F11, it executes and that row is ready to start entering the for loop. So any variable I hover over, I can see its value. And if I expand this one, I'm going to pin this up, pin this so you can see it. And if I expand it, no, this is a little hard to see here. Let me expand that. No, that's not what I meant to do. Yeah, come on. Okay, you know what? It's not showing up nicely there. Let me do it this way. It was showing up better here when I had it. Not line number. I have to expand it here. I had it showing a second ago. That's really
weird. It was there.
I know. Something strange going on with the debugger here. So all rows list. If I go here. So it contains literally one row for each. So let me just go to the next line of code. We can see it by current row. So you can see the current value of current row. What is going on with my debugger? It's acting a little odd at the moment. Let me just try, I'm going to try something else here. Let me go down to the autos window, and no variables are showing up my autos. My locals, maybe? Locals, by the way, is this window here called locals. This is a window you can use when you're in the debugger that shows you the contents of all the variables that are currently available to be viewed.
Right.
So if I go here, I can see, you know, that animal file is currently, it says closed, which is strange. The name of the file is tasmania.txt. It's opened with read mode. If I open CSV, I can actually see the values of the CSV. But I'm just trying to, what's odd is my variables all rows list. Here it is. There's the variable all those rows list. But for some reason, I'm having trouble seeing the actual values.
Yeah, it's showing you that you have four, but that's okay.
Yeah, so that's true. I can see it's got four lines.
Yeah.
And then current row, see, I'm confused because current row is not listed. Throwing me off a little.
Yeah.
Let me try executing one more line of code and seeing if that pops up. Something odd just happened there. So let's just restart that. Try that one more time. All right, so we go through. We're here. We're about to execute this line of code. I'm just going to dock this back to the bottom again. So it's kind of out of the way. Not that much, thank you. It's a little generous in terms of space. Want to be able to see the code. I'm a little more concerned with you guys seeing the code. You guys just go away. There, get away. Go away. I'll bring up what I need. Okay, shrink this down so you can see the window. I want you to look at the code. That's what I care about. And the line is about to execute, about to read the contents into my variable. And then it goes into my loop, prints the current row on the screen, prints on the current screen. Now this time I think it's actually working. Now you can see the value of current row is Tasmanian emu extinct. And the next time I execute, the value of current row is Tasmanian tiger extinct. And this time, let's see if it actually is. There we go. Now I can actually see that, you know, the different values, possum, common, and so on.
Yeah. It was really kind of funny that it didn't actually, it didn't seem to read the file. That was sort of weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I said something wonky happened and, you know, like wonky things do happen.
Yes, absolutely.
It's life. So now I have all the different values displayed on the screen, but I have them, still have them at the row level. There are definitely times when you're going to want to be able to access an individual value from the CSV file. You don't necessarily want the entire row. You want to know the name of the animal that's in that file, because the CSV file you receive might contain 10 columns of data, and maybe you only care about the name of the animal. You don't care if it's endangered, what region it lived in, if it's a herbivore and a carnivore and all of that. So, well, so then we get an interesting challenge, if you think about it, because I have, right now, I have a list, all rows list, and that list, that is a list, and each value is a is the entire row. When I process through current row, then I basically, current row is a list that contains all the entries for that row. So it starts to get really confusing, because now if I want an individual value, I have to say for current word in current row, print current word. So I basically got a list of lists that's been returned. So I have to loop through each list in the list.
Okay.
And then as I loop through each list in the list, I can get the individual words from that
list. So what it's looking like to me is that it's basically giving you back, if you will, sort of a, of an object, and it's giving you the ability to go into each one. So in your particular case, and if you ran this, we would see it, it's...
I'm going to do this as well, so we can see that.
That
would make it a little clearer.
Yep. Yeah, so if you go ahead and run this, and so we can see the output. So it's looking to me like it's just simply grabbing each individual item. There's your trailing space after the comma.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's sort of a throwback to what we had earlier. And so it makes it very easy to take the each row and then break down into it. So if there was a calculation that you needed to do, if there was a display that you wanted to put together, you could go ahead and do that. Now, of course, the main catch whenever you're working with CSV files is that I'm not able to access the individual items by name.
No, you can't say...
It's just by location.
You can't go in. Unfortunately, there's no ability to say, would you please give me third row, second column? We can't do that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So you end up having to go through the whole thing and then extracting. Well, you could say, if I'm on the third time through the loop, and it's the second column, then take it out.
Exactly. Exactly. But that being said, it's still a million times easier than having to parse through the CSV file itself. Ask any developer one of the things they hate doing the most,
parsing.
And that's going to be parsing strings. That trying to figure out where the commas are, the plus one, minus one.
Where's the first letter of the next word? Where's the last letter of the first word?
Yeah, you know, got better things to do with my time, you know? So much easier just to go ahead and use the utility and let it do the work for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you look at it, wherever I said print current row, that was the output that's appearing inside the square brackets. And wherever I'm printing current word, then those are just, so you can see here, this is the list value that was contained inside current row. And then what I did is I then had a loop that said loop through this list, which contains Tasmanian deviled, and retrieve each of the words from within that list.
Yep, exactly.
So it's a little confusing. The more you do it, practice, practice, practice. That's how you get the hang of it. The more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get with these nested loops. But that this is one of the most common nested loop scenarios is when we need to access the individual values inside a CSV file. So I'm just going to go back to the PowerPoint for a second. And so there's my how do I retrieve the individual rows. And then once I've, and there's just an example on the slide. I did want to put a more complete example in there. And then we just did the demo. And if you want the individual values, that shows you how you can make the nested loop to show the individual values in each individual row from your CSV file using nested loops. Now, one of the things, though, that I know somebody out there, I'm surprised, I don't know if it's come up in the comment windows yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody looked at this output and said, I don't like those square brackets.
Not yet.
Prince of Rose. Oh, see, yeah. if I take this part of this out, if I comment out this code, and I just said, sure, I'll print you the contents of that file, that's ugly.
It is. And the reason that it's printing that way is because it's showing you what's going on behind the scenes.
Because it's a list.
It's showing you the list.
Yeah.
And if you just simply want the text, that's not really what you're looking for.
As a programmer, I love the fact it returns it this way because that's why I can treat it as a list. Yeah. Each row is returned as a list item. But to a user, they're like, what's with these square brackets? If you tried to give that to your manager as running a report, your manager would be like, oh, that's hideous. You got to fix the way that looks.
Right.
So there is a way to change the formatting. The way it works is you use a join function, and when you call the join function, you specify what character would you like to use to separate the different values. So you could show the different words or different phrases separated by commas or separated by semicolons, and then you call the join function to say, join all these different parts of the list together and use a comma to separate them or use a period to separate them. The syntax is a little funky, I will say. This is one of those ones when I first saw the syntax, I was like, what is this code doing? So the way it works is you specify the separator that you want to display, a comma, a semicolon, a colon, a slash. Then you say dot join, so the word dot join, this is a keyword, you can't change that. And then you specify the variable name that holds your list. And this doesn't have to be a list from a CSV file. This works on any list, by the way. So the way that's going to look is if I have a row, which I read from my data, then I can say print, comma, because that's a separator I want to use, and I'm including a space.
Yeah, because you have the space from comma to the next word, so
I don't have to, though.
But, nope.
And then I say dot join, and then I specify the row that I want printed that way.
Yeah.
So the way that looks is, if I see if I can get this syntax right on the first time. This is always fun. If I do that, if I say print, let's say use a comma, dot join current row. And that should print it out. Oops, would help if I wasn't still running the code. And now you can see that I don't get those square brackets appearing around it. And it's just a nicer, more user-friendly format.
Yep.
And just to be clear, this is not specifying how the fields are separated. This is how I want them displayed. If I change that to a semicolon, it now displays it using semicolon to display it when it's displayed back to me.
Yep.
So a little weird in terms of syntax. Again, we don't all memorize these things. You look it up when you need it.
Yep.
Don't stress over it. All right. So given all that, I think it's time for a new challenge.
Okay. Let's see what you got.
All right, so the challenge is to write a program that will print the names and ages of all the guests in the guest list file you have created in the last module if you completed the last challenge. If you did not get a chance to complete the last challenge and you want to jump straight to this one, what you can always do is just do what I did. Go into Notepad, create a file kind of like the one I have below that contains names and ages separated by commas, one row per line, one name and age per line, and then try reading that. But just make sure you don't end up with a .txt, .txt file like I did.
Hold on.
Sure you can see the file extensions.
Can we bring that slide back up again? If that's names and ages, why do you have me listed as age? You know what?
I
look pretty darn good for 80. I mean, yeah.
Well, that's an octal.
An octal. Ah, I see what you did there. Well done.
Yeah, or hexadecimal.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so that takes us to the end of another module. Congratulations.
Yep.
You guys now have the ability, you think about how far you've come, you can now write code that can create files, read from files, process that information.
Yep.
We're really moving along.
Absolutely. Now, the next thing that we need to focus our attention on is this, is that we've seen a lot of the raw pieces on how to put together a program, on how to put together an application. But one of the problems that we're going to wind up running into with all those individual raw pieces is that if we're trying to keep doing something similar over and over and over again, we're going to wind up with 8 lines of code that are always the exact same thing. It'd be nice if we could just ball that up, put a name on it, and then just call it. Wouldn't that be nice?
It would make it nice, a much tidier way to write our code.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm lazy. I don't want to rewrite the code several times.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you say we take 10 minutes, we'll come on back, and then we'll take a look at how to do exactly that. So we'll see you guys in 10.
See you soon.